Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
In the U.S., claims of crime have exposed a rift in Georgia's pro-Trump fake electoral group. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A new legal filing has exposed a potentially major rift among a group of so-called bogus voters in Georgia who sought to help Donald Trump overturn the 2020 election results in a scheme currently being the subject of a criminal investigation. According to a court document filed on Tuesday, 18th of April, a group of people involved in the scheme recently told state prosecutors that another of the fake voters had committed crimes in which they were not involved. The finger-pointing, included in a document submitted by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, reveals a rift within the group as prosecutors near the end of their investigation and consider bringing charges against the former President Donald Trump and dozens of his allies. The court filing was primarily aimed at disqualifying attorney Kimberly Devereaux, who represents 10 of the fake voters, from the case because of a twisted new conflict of interest that arose last week when some of her clients implicated another of her clients in an additional crime. Certain constituents have said that another constituent represented by Ms. Devereaux committed acts which constitute violations of Georgia's law, and that they were not a party to these additional acts, Fannie Willis said in the document, which did not specify the nature of the alleged crimes. The fact that 10 of Kimberly Devereaux's clients have filed criminal complaints against another of his clients in the same investigation suggests that Devereaux can no longer offer adequate counsel to her client accused of other crimes and must be removed from the case altogether, according to the court filing. In seeking Kimberly Devereaux's disqualification, prosecutors pointed to Georgia State Supreme Court's 2013 decision to disqualify an attorney representing a defendant and the defendant's sister-in-law after the sister-in-law ended by testifying against the original client. The court filing also called for Kimberly Devereaux to be removed from the case after she and her co-lawyer at the time, Holly Pearson, appeared to ignore a July 2022 order from the investigating judge to understand that false voters that they could make immunity agreements. A month after the order, according to the document, Holly Pearson claimed that she and Kimberly Devereaux had spoken to their clients about immunity agreements and that none of their clients were interested. Holly Pearson then moved to represent only one voter, with Kimberly Devereaux representing the rest. But when prosecutors interviewed some of the bogus voters last week, they were surprised to learn that no potential immunity offers were ever discussed with them, according to the court filing. Kimberly Devereaux could not be immediately reached for comment. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. A new legal filing has exposed a potentially major fracture among a group of so-called fake electors in Georgia who sought to aid Donald Trump in overturning the 2020 election results in a scheme now under criminal investigation. According to a court document filed on Tuesday, 18th of April, a group of people involved in the scheme recently told state prosecutors that another one of the fake electors committed crimes that they were not involved in. The finger-pointing, included in a document submitted by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, exposes a rift within the group as prosecutors near the end of the investigation and consider bringing charges against the former President Donald Trump and dozens of his allies. The court filing principally sought to disqualify attorney Kimberly Devereaux, who represents 10 of the fake electors, from the case because of a twisted new conflict of interest that arose last week when some of her clients implicated another of her clients in an additional crime. The allegations of additional illegal activity by one of the fake electors comes as prosecutors from the district attorney's office consider asking a new grand jury to dismiss a potentially sprawling criminal conspiracy against Donald Trump, his top aides, and the fake voters themselves. Fannie Willis and her team could finalize their plans as soon as the end of the month and then form a grand jury for May to hear the case, according to a source familiar with the matter, although it is not clear whether the latest development could delay procedure. Donald Trump is considered to have two main legal risks in Georgia: the calls he has made to officials like Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to reverse his electoral defeat in the weeks following the 2020 presidential election, and its role in bringing together false voters. But at the heart of the investigation are the steps that Donald Trump and his campaign aides took, knowing it was likely illegal, in rounding up 16 pro-Trump voters to surreptitiously enter the Georgia state capitol and submit unauthorized Electoral College votes for Trump in Congress. The special investigative grand jury that heard evidence for about 7 months about Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election results recently recommended more than a dozen people for indictment. His foreman also suggested in media interviews last month that Donald Trump was among them.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The one-of-a-kind, multi-billion-pound coronation is finally coming to an end. A three-day ceremony which saw King Charles III crowned along with his wife Camilla. More than 2,000 guests, including world leaders, aristocrats, and celebrities, all participated in the event. Tens of thousands of people flooded the streets in London to see King Charles III formally crowned. Thousands saw the king receiving a royal salute from members of the military in the gardens of Buckingham Palace following his coronation. The coronation of King Charles III in London's historic Westminster Abbey was the first in the United Kingdom for 7 decades. Heavy police presence overshadowed the wealthy event. The London Metropolitan Police deployed more than 11,000 officers for one of their biggest ever security operations for the day of the coronation. For many, the coronation of King Charles III was maybe a lifetime event full of joy and days-long festivities as tens of thousands turned out to catch a glimpse of the newly crowned King Charles and Queen Camilla, who rode in a state coach back to Buckingham Palace after Saturday services at Westminster Abbey. But not everyone who came to watch the multi-billion pound ceremony was there to cheer Charles. Thousands of people poured onto the streets to protest against the antiquated monarchical system.
Not my king! Not my king! Not my king!
My king!
Not my king!
Not my king!
Because I don't believe in hereditary monarchy, and I think this is costing a huge amount of money when lots of people are struggling, and the economy's falling apart, and the public services are awful, and we need to invest in that and not in Charles and his big party.
London's Metropolitan Police said in total, over 60 arrests were made on Saturday for what it called offences including breach of the peace and conspiracy to cause a public nuisance. Those detained include leader of an anti-monarchist group, The Republic. Graham Smith criticised the policing of the coronation as heavy-handed, saying the arrests were not about protecting people from harm, but about protecting the kingdom from embarrassment. The coronation of King Charles III comes as there is no budget revealed for the historic national state occasion. Some suggest that the ceremony could cost the nation between 50 to 100 million pounds. The government has so far refused to comment on the exact cost, making the amount of public funds spent on the festivities unknown. What is known, though, is that the multi-million pound coronation falls to taxpayers to foot the bill. Not only that, the coronation comes at a time when the country is gripped with protests and strikes and a dispute with the government over pay. Since last June, a huge number of workers have walked off their jobs, including teachers, civil servants, train and bus drivers, border officials and university staff, nurses, ambulance drivers, and staff at swaths of government agencies just to express that they can't literally make ends meet. With several waves of strikes sweeping the UK, the economy has been hit harder than initially expected. The UK inflation has experienced a 40-year high. That includes food prices, with some key ingredients seeing a steep rise of up to 50%, according to some detailed government data. The situation is to the extent where many people across the country are struggling to put food at the table. Furthermore, the UK financial woes have exacerbated the economic and social inequality there. That has prompted many to question the costly pomp and pageantry associated with the state-funded ceremony. A survey prior to the coronation showed that most of the British people simply did not want to pay for the costly event, and instead, they wanted the coronation to be funded by the royal family itself. Anti-monarchy activists said the cost is a slap in the face for millions of people who are struggling to meet their basic needs. Yet, they have to foot the bill in the form of taxes. Maybe that's why many across Britain see the monarchy as outdated and undemocratic, saying the coronation is a celebration of hereditary power and has no place in modern society. Maybe that's why many are worried that the coronation of a 74-year-old man will indirectly result in so many people going hungry. Sudan and one entire month of intense fighting there between the country's army and a paramilitary group known as Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. As the conflict entered its fourth week on Saturday, airstrikes battered the capital, Khartoum. Warplanes were seen bombing targets, with witnesses saying the fighter jets pounded various parts of the city. That caused telecommunication services to be cut off for hours. Forces loyal to both groups, the army led by Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and RSF leader Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, are fighting intense street battles as well. This is Burhan and Dagalo are engaged in a power struggle over the RSF's integration into the regular army. While the deadly battle rages on in Sudan, the two forces have sent their delegations to Saudi Arabia for talks with the aim of bringing the devastating conflict to an end. The army confirmed that it had sent envoys to Saudi Arabia to discuss what it called details of a truce with its paramilitary foes. The RSF also confirmed that its delegation is present in Saudi Arabia for talks. Meanwhile, the United States and Saudi Arabia have issued a joint statement confirming direct talks between the warring sides in the Saudi city of Jeddah. The statement welcomed the start of the talks and called for a sustainable global effort to quell fighting. The negotiations in Jeddah are the first such serious attempts to end the battle. Numerous ceasefires have so far failed to bring what is regarded as a civil war in Sudan to a halt. The fighting has brought much of the country's vital infrastructure to the brink of collapse, with people across the northeastern African nation struggling to provide their basic needs. Heavy gunfire and deadly airstrikes have already prompted so many countries to withdraw their citizens and nationals from Sudan. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, France, Turkey, and the Netherlands are among those which have already evacuated their citizens from Sudan. Some others have suspended their operations amid heavy fighting there. The deadly conflict in Sudan comes as global organizations have warned of an imminent human catastrophe there. According to a non-governmental organization specializing in disaggregated conflict data collection, the war in Sudan has so far killed around 700 people, mostly in Khartoum and the western Darfur region. Some other organizations have sounded the alarm over the number of children being impacted by the war. On Friday, the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, expressed concern that the situation in Sudan has become fatal for a frighteningly large number of children. UNICEF has said nearly 200 children were killed and about 1,700 wounded only during the first 11 days of the conflict. UNICEF says the actual number could be much higher. The sad part of the story, though, is that some countries have warned that they expect the conflict to continue for a long time. The International Organization for Migration says so far nearly 450,000 civilians have already fled their homes since the fighting began. That includes more than 115,000 who have sought refuge in neighboring countries like Chad. In the meantime, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says it is preparing for an outflow of 860,000 people. Those figures clearly show the magnitude of the tragedy there, with many saying the conflict has exacerbated the already dire humanitarian situation, hunger and malnutrition included. The United Nations has warned that if the fighting rages on between the two forces, it could raise the number of Sudanese threatened by hunger by as many as 2.5 million. Given all the disappointing figures, the ceasefire negotiations in Saudi Arabia have raised hopes not only for millions of Sudanese throughout the country, but for many in the region and around the globe that the conflict could end soon. This not only will save the lives of people who are grappling with years of unrest and uprisings throughout the past decades or so, but will also bring relief to the people of the world who do not want to see another genocidal conflict. But if the warring sides fail to come up with a sustainable solution during the talks, it will be hard to imagine what will be waiting for the people of Sudan.
The sounding bell of the U.S. stock market, symbolic of a stock market that should be performing well. But these cheers are not reflective of what is going on in the U.S. economy. Instead, warning signs should be going off due to the U.S. banking sector. Trading was halted in shares of two more U.S. lenders. Regulators had to step in after PacWest and Western Alliance shares plunged. Although there was optimism in Wall Street after stocks, like in the banking sector, jumped Friday, following a good jobs report and strong Apple earnings, there were still fears and worries about the sector after the failure of four mid-sized banks since early March. Bank customers and investors feared a repeat of other bank failures in the U.S., like First Republic, SVB, and Signature. And those fears are justified. As many as 16 mid-sized banks have shed more than $57 billion in market value since last Friday. American regulators seized then-sold First Republic Bank to J.P. Morgan Chase on Monday, marking the second largest ever U.S. bank collapse and the third major bank shutdown nationwide in the past 2 months, following the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, or SVB, and Signature Bank.
Today, the Federal Reserve issued its long-awaited report on the cause of the Silicon Valley Bank failure. And while it put the failure squarely in the hands of management and its board for failing to oversee a safe and sound business plan, the Fed did put some heat on itself that its own bank regulators did not respond quickly enough and forcefully enough to conditions on the ground. And these conditions also are conditions that First Republic faced.
The question that is being raised once again is, are we witnessing a repeat of the U.S. financial crisis? Since 2001, more than 500 banks across the U.S. have closed. Most happened after the 2008 financial crisis. Of all the banks that closed since 2001, the largest was Washington Mutual, which closed in September 2008, during the early stages of the financial crisis. The closure of First Republic is the second largest bank closure in the U.S., and the largest since the end of the financial crisis. But this is what stands out for those that believe that there is another financial crisis in the making. About 70 banks across the U.S. have closed over the past decade. The total assets of the three banks closed this year has exceeded the total assets of the 25 banks that closed in 2008, meaning that the scale of U.S. bank closures in 2023 is the largest in years.
In this case, you had a group of banks here that did not plan well for interest rate risk. They did not plan well for big growth, explosive growth. They didn't plan for what they should be planning for, and that's a liquidity event where you have more than ordinary numbers of withdrawals, especially given their levels of uninsured deposits. That's a problem. And so, you know, the chickens have kind of come home to roost for all of these banks.
As seen here, the three banks, namely First Republic, Silicon Valley Bank, and Signature Bank, held a total of $532 billion in assets. That is more than the $526 billion, when adjusted for inflation, held by the 25 banks that collapsed in 2008 at the height of the global financial crisis. There are major factors that are affecting the health of U.S. banks. One of them are the recent Fed hikes. In March of this year, a study jointly released by economists from multiple universities in the U.S. showed that the Fed's rate hike greatly increased the vulnerability of the U.S. banking system.
Fed, just as they were stubborn and obstinate on the idea that inflation was transitory, they're being stubborn and obstinate on the idea that they need to hit 2% inflation before they let up on the tightening. And that's simply just history doesn't bear it out. And unless and until they come to that realization by studying history, you're going to see more and more of these situations.
Affected by the Federal Reserve's aggressive interest rate hikes, the value of financial assets like bonds held by many U.S. banks has shrunk sharply, and the asset value of some banks has even decreased by more than 20%. According to the study, if market confidence continues to weaken and more depositors withdraw their deposits, as many as 186 banks may become insolvent and face the risk of closure. That should be a major concern for the Fed and the man on top, the U.S. President Joe Biden. Another item of concern for the U.S. administration is the U.S. debt ceiling. As it stands, the Biden administration remains at odds with Republicans who have refused to increase the debt ceiling.
Our MAGA Republicans in Congress are threatening to undo all this progress by letting us, quote, default on the debt unless we agree to their demands. The two are totally unrelated. Whether you pay the debt or not doesn't have a damn thing to do with what your budget is. What your budget is. Where are you going to spend money? How are you going to raise the money? What are you going to cut? What are you going to... They're two separate issues.
If the debt ceiling, which has reached its peak of $31.4 trillion, is not raised, that could potentially lead to a government shutdown on June 1st. The U.S. government reaction so far, in terms of an intervention, has been subdued. The Sentry says even though U.S. banks are failing, it is reported that U.S. authorities are unlikely to intervene. The reason given? Regional lenders, such as PacWest and Western Alliance, are not seen as systemically important, and more consolidation is predicted to be ahead. The outlook, however, looks bleak. Unless the Fed rides to the rescue with cuts in interest rates, the options are amalgamation, regulation, or more banks going bust. The response of the U.S. authorities suggests little appetite for a laissez-faire approach. While the U.S. is struggling with these economic issues, it is also facing the prospects of de-dollarization, which is uncontrollable since many countries are queuing up to wean their economy off the dollar. Russia has accused Ukraine of attacking the Kremlin with drones in a failed assassination attempt to kill President Vladimir Putin, vowing retaliation for what it has called a terrorist attack. Moscow has said the two drones were used in the alleged attack on Putin's residence in the Kremlin's citadel overnight, adding that the drones were disabled by electronic defenses.
It is technically possible. Ukraine has several types of drones that can fit the profile. For example, its newly developed UJ-22 drone can actually fly the distance. It's a commercial drone that they acquired from China. It's Mugen 5 cargo drone, which can be basically purchased online and could be refitted into a military drone. That drone can fly several hundred kilometers, and it was used in previous attacks.
Kremlin statement said, "We regard these actions as a planned terrorist act and an attempt on the president's life carried out on the eve of Victory Day, the May 9 parade, at which the presence of foreign guests is also planned."
And of course, attacks of this kind, if they are in fact carried by Ukrainian military, are meant to keep the Russian military off balance by forcing them to reallocate and rededicate air defense resources to specific places like Moscow, probably at the expense of other regions, including, for example, Russian military inside Ukraine proper that has to have enough air defense and electronic warfare protection.
Separately, the Speaker of Russia's parliament demanded the use of, quote, weapons capable of stopping and destroying the Kiev terrorist regime, response to the alleged attack on Kremlin. However, Ukraine denied any involvement in the alleged drone operation. Kiev has said the attack was, quote, staged by Moscow.
The Russians may try to leverage this narrative around an assassination on Putin to then up their game with regards to pretext to up their game to go after Zelensky himself. But they've been trying to do that anyway since the beginning of the war. There's plenty of reporting that indicates Russian kind of kill teams were out there trying to hunt down both Zelensky and his family. So it's mainly, I think, a rally around the flag effect that the Russians are going for.
Meanwhile, Ukraine says Russia has targeted cities in a new wave of missile strikes and shelling across the country. Officials and media outlets say multiple explosions were heard in the capital, Kiev, and elsewhere. Blasts caused by Russian shelling were also reported in the southern Zaporizhzhia region and the port city of Odessa. Kiev and some central and eastern Ukrainian regions have announced air alerts following the Russian statement accusing Ukraine of attacking the Kremlin. There are now some reports that Ukrainian forces have begun their counterattack in Bakhmut. Russian officials have said Ukraine's counteroffensive against Russia will have no benefit and will only lead to more bloodshed. The U.S. and its allies have put much hope in the offensive. However, leaked documents show Western military officials do not expect Ukraine to regain as much territory. Ukrainian forces have also been using lots of manpower and other resources fighting in Bakhmut. The intensifying crisis comes amid fresh U.S. military aid to Ukraine. The U.S. is sending another $300 million military aid package to Ukraine, including, for the first time, short-range air-launched rockets, deepening its involvement in the war in defiance of repeated warnings by Russia. The package includes Hydra-70 rockets, which are unguided projectiles fired from aircraft. It also includes artillery rounds, 155-millimeter howitzer cannons, anti-tank missiles, and mortars. The Pentagon has also sent at least 20 high-mobility artillery rocket systems, HIMARS, to Ukraine. HIMARS systems, which are made by Lockheed Martin, are intended to be a core component of Ukraine's fighting force in the future. The package brings the total amount of U.S. military aid to about $36 billion. The U.S. is still drawing funds for military assistance to Ukraine, from the $45 billion aid package that Congress authorized in December.
Running against Russia, being nasty to Russia, is very popular. But I'll tell you what's not popular. More than 60% of the American people do not like all the money we're spending on Ukraine. And the American media is not reporting that, and it's also not reporting that there's demonstrations are going every weekend in Europe, particularly in Germany. There's a lot of demonstrations, not about the pipeline, against the war, the money that's being spent on Ukraine, and the whole notion of that war, and the whole rationale for the war. And you can almost understand why Biden wanted to keep Germany from having the option to open the pipeline.
The $45 billion is expected to be exhausted by the summer, meaning the White House might ask Congress for more funds soon. The U.S. and its Western allies have kept feeding Ukraine with massive amounts of arms since the start of the war last year. Moscow has time and again warned that military assistance will only prolong the war.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump has said America is a failing nation that is in decline. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, America and its economy are facing major challenges that could undermine Washington's position in the world. Former U.S. President Donald Trump told the National Rifle Association NRA convention in the state of Indiana recently. The Biden administration has pushed the country to the brink of collapse with both its foreign and domestic policies, Trump claimed, as he spoke about his ambitions for 2024 presidential campaign. The USA is a mess. Our country is crashing. Inflation is out of control. The former president stated the U.S. dollar is crashing as well, he claimed, adding that the American currency will soon no longer be the world's standard. This would amount to Washington's greatest defeat in 200 years and was unthinkable just a few years ago, Trump said, as he addressed the NRA convention in Indianapolis. The Biden administration's failures in the foreign policy field have seen Russia join forces with China. The former president said, adding that together with Iran, Moscow and Beijing have now formed a coalition. We have never been in such danger in our lives. I believe it is the most dangerous time in the history of our country, Trump said, noting that the Biden administration had been unable to avoid an escalation between Washington and Moscow, and the use of nuclear weapons is now being mentioned, including by other countries around the world. According to Trump, the current administration has done more damage to the U.S. than the five worst presidents in the country's history, although he did not identify the former leaders to whom he was referring. Trump, who has confirmed his intention to seek the Republican
nomination for 2024 presidential election, vowed to make America great again if elected. He remains mired in several legal issues, however, including a criminal case relating to campaign finances. During his speech recently, Trump repeatedly described this prosecution as election interference instigated by the Democrats and maintains that his legal issues will not derail his bid to return to the White House. According to China Daily, economic reports are appearing that collectively raise a very large red flag about the state of U.S. economy. Could the U.S. economy be entering the kind of monumental collapse that occurs just once a century? By some accounts, it is simply too early to know whether the approaching downturn will be the kind of simple contraction that occurs every 4 years or is instead something far more serious. As noted by the Conference Board, U.S. consumer spending has continued to support GDP growth despite the dual headwinds of rising interest rates and high inflation. At the same time, other reports have begun to appear that paints a very different picture of the overall economic performance of the U.S., and these data points are hard to overlook. Wage growth in the U.S. dropped for 20 straight months, taking place at a time of rising inflation. A long-standing and ongoing decline in worker wages is putting massive pressure on U.S. households. The squeeze have apparently triggered a wave of crime that some are calling jogging. As explained by commentator Michael Sinder, from coast to coast, predators are patiently watching potential victims and strike those victims when they're juggling their car keys or cell phones as they prepare to enter their cars. This report is certainly not enough to indicate a serious moment of stress on U.S. households, but there is more. Altogether, $450 trillion in income was siphoned away from U.S. workers between 1975 and 2018, due largely to the efforts of inflation. A massive and invisible decline in real wages was experienced by U.S. workers in the form of foregone income that went unnoticed by most U.S. families. The culminative hit experienced by U.S. households over this 44-year period has now reached the unimaginable level of $450 trillion. The upshot of this invisible creep is that many families in the U.S. have had to dip into savings or sell their homes just to cover the increasing cost of living. And worse, given their traditional work ethic, many U.S. citizens are blaming themselves for not making ends meet. The U.S. federal deficit grew by $249 billion in just 1 month. Andrew Duhren of the Wall Street Journal has reported that the U.S. federal deficit grew by a record $249 billion last month, meaning on December 12, 2022. What this suggests is that the U.S. government is fast losing its ability to function as a lender of last resort and, as a result, may not be able to bail out its own citizens when a bailout is needed most. In addition, as the federal deficit widens in leaps and bounds, the U.S. Treasury will have to pay much higher coupon rates in order to attract international investors and induce them to buy U.S. Treasury bonds. This increase in coupon rates will further worsen the effects of inflation already being registered by U.S. households and promise that even higher interest rates will attach to future car loans and home purchase mortgages. This data point also confirms that the problem of rising interest rates appears to be accelerating. U.S. retail vegetable process increased by a whopping 38% in the month of October alone. In a report filed by Elizabeth Elkin of Bloomberg, water cuts by the government and storms were blamed for nearly 40% rise in the retail price of vegetables placed on homeowners between October 1st and November 1st. This number is not as small and presents further evidence that the pace of economic stress is accelerating and possibly bringing the U.S. closer to the onset of complete economic collapse.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ideal University Student brings change in thinking and reality of the society and world. The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with university students and representatives of student associations in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on April 18th, 2023. If we hand over the country's facilities, its production facilities, its factories, all these things that were operating smoothly, if we hand them over to the government will not be able to manage production facilities and large production companies. The government cannot do that. There will be corruption. These things have frequently happened over the past few years. The only solution to these problems has been privatization. There truly was no other option, and this was not done suddenly. It took place based on thinking, studies, and predictions, and after hours of discussion. Yes, I know that the expectation I had from privatization has not yet been fulfilled, but good things have been done. When you say that the government enterprises that have been given to the private sector will not return their dollars to the government, such a thing is not true. The ones that are not returning dollars are the organizations that are currently operating under the government. This is a problem that I myself recently told the government officials. I have repeated this and brought it up several times.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
It is the government enterprises that do business and deal with foreign countries that do not return their dollars to the central bank. So this is not related to the private sector. Of course, the private sector has its own problems. It needs to be supervised and it requires attention and observance. These things are required and there is no doubt about this. Regarding the economic meeting of the heads of the executive branches, first of all, this is not a permanent matter. It is temporary. Secondly, the meeting is for special purposes. I identified four issues which I told them. One is the issue of the budget, arranging the budget and reforming the budget structure. Because one of our biggest problems is the issue of the budget structure. And there were three other issues. That was the purpose behind this meeting. Of course, things have not developed as they should have, but shutting things down is not the solution. The solution is to pursue the tasks until they are completed. There are some issues that are a problem due to a lack of agreement among high-level officials. So how do we solve these? The solution is for you to sit together, discuss things, make a unified decision, and take action. This is why a council has been formed.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
De-dollarization is increasingly making headlines, and you don't have to look too hard to find examples. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Financial Times, central banks around the world are shifting away from the US dollar and turning their attention to gold as a safe haven asset, the chairman of Rockefeller International, Rocker Sharma, has said. Prices for the commodity have surged 20% in the past 6 months, with demand coming not from the usual suspects, such as large and small investors, seeking a hedge against inflation and low real interest rates, but from heavy buyers like central banks, Sharma wrote in the Financial Times recently. According to the investment expert, regulators are sharply reducing their dollar holdings and seeking a safe alternative. Central banks now account for a record 33% of monthly global demand for gold and are ramping up gold buying more than at any rate since data began in 1950, Sharma added. He explained, "This buying boom has helped push the price of gold to near record levels and more than 50% higher than what models based on real interest rates would suggest," adding that clearly something new is driving gold prices.
Ch-
Sharma pointed out that 9 of the top central bank buyers are in the developing world, including Russia, India and China. Not coincidentally, the 3 countries are in talks with Brazil and South Africa about creating a new currency to challenge the dollar, Sharma noted. He attributed the rush for the precious metal to increasing sanctions pressure exerted by the U.S. and its allies, with as many as 30% of nations facing international penalties, up from 10% in the early 1990s. Sharma argued, thus the oldest and most traditional of assets, gold, is now a vehicle of central bank revolt against the dollar. Some countries began to seek alternatives after seeing Russian assets frozen abroad and the country cut off from the SWIFT global financial messaging system. Sharma wrote, suddenly it was clear that any nation could be a target. According to the expert, the U.S. saw sanctions as a cost-free way to fight Russia, but in reality, the weaponization of the dollar has come at a cost for Washington, as even allies such as Thailand and the Philippines have started to look for alternatives for dollar. Meanwhile, Press TV noted, Argentine President Alberto Fernandez and his Brazilian counterpart, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, have vowed to devise a mechanism to use their local currencies in bilateral trade amid a growing trend of dumping the U.S. dollar in trade deals by many countries. The left-leaning leaders of the 2 main Mercosur Southern Common Market partners met recently in the Brazilian capital to explore ways to boost trade and dump the U.S. dollar. The meeting was long, difficult, and we will carry out many more meetings, Lula said alongside Fernandez, spoke to the press. I made a commitment to my friend Alberto Fernandez that I will do every and any sacrifice so we can help Argentina in this difficult moment. Fernandez said they have made the decision to help make sure that Brazilian companies continue exporting to Argentina, and they had asked us to do some homework, which we have already done and have to do with the necessary guarantees. The proposed plan involves a line of credit to finance Brazilian companies that export to Argentina with the intention of avoiding use of the dollar, said Brazil's Deputy Minister of Economy, Gabriel Galipolo. Galipolo declared that his government proposed the creation of a special line of financing for Brazilian companies exporting to Argentina using local currencies and thus maintain the flow of bilateral trade between the 2 Latin American economic heavyweights. The official further explained in an interview with the local Globo News Network that the use of the U.S. dollar for trade had caused the country to lose billions. Galipolo underlined in the last 5 years, due to Brazil's lack of mechanisms to finance its exports and Argentine imports, we have lost approximately $6 billion of space in trade balance with Argentina to China, which has been providing financing mechanisms in alternative means of payment, such as swaps or giving credit to the exporter. The deal with Brazil, which is Argentina's largest trade partner, comes as Buenos Aires' economy looks fragile after a sharp devaluation of the local currency late last month and a drain of U.S. dollars from central bank reserves. Under the new agreement, Argentina and Brazil intend to exclude the dollar as their payment currency and use a mechanism similar to the swaps with China for foreign trade. Argentine importers will thus be able to pay for their purchases in peso, and the Brazilian government will convert the payment for their trade deals into reais. The development comes amid efforts by a growing number of countries across the globe to ditch the U.S. dollar in favor of local currencies of trading partners. The global trend to substitute the US dollar with local currencies in trade transactions continues to accelerate as more nations have taken steps to ditch the greenback. Argentina announced last week that it will pay for Chinese imports in yuan instead of dollars to preserve its international reserves. In a meeting in Buenos Aires with China's ambassador Zhu Xiaoli, Argentine economy minister Sergio Massa said his country will be able to program a volume of imports in yuan worth the equivalent of more than $1 billion from next month. Massa added the South American country will program a volume of imports in yuan worth more than $1 billion from next month, which will replace the use of US dollar. Meanwhile, RT wrote in this regard, new sources of non-dollar finance are emerging in the world. There are new bilateral agreements to trade and lend in currencies other than the US dollar. Even more importantly, major oil trade buyers and sellers, Moscow and Riyadh, as much as Beijing and New Delhi, are agreeing to trade it in non-dollar currencies. These deals are destroying one of the main pillars of dollar dominance since OPEC quadrupled and then doubled oil prices in 1970s, giving countries around the world a major reason to demand and hold dollars. Needless to say, claims about the attractions of US finance were exaggerated. As far as most of the world was concerned, rather than providing beneficial productive investment, the US dollar-denominated financial system only unleashed torrents of short-term hot money that has only profited mostly Western speculative investors while regularly wreaking havoc on the rest of the world's economies.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The fifth international exhibition of the export capabilities of Iran is underway at Tehran International Permanent Fairground from May 7th to 10th. The event aims to help companies export their products, develop new markets, and promote their industries while focusing on the importance of non-oil exports. One of the most successful contributors to Iran's non-oil revenues is the country's free industrial and trade zones, which accounted for one-third of the country's non-oil exports last year. During a press conference, the secretary of Iran's Free Zones High Council said 370 major investment projects are going to be executed in seven free trade zones across the country, and all investors are welcome to participate in these projects.
Our colleagues have conducted preliminary studies about investment in the seven free industrial and trade zones. Preliminary justification plans have been prepared, which shows that these projects are going to be profitable. Studies related to the market, land, energy, etc., have also been conducted.
There are seven active free zones in Iran, including Kish, Chabahar, Qeshm, Anzali, Aras, Arvand, and Maku. According to official statistics, the free zones' productions were about $1 billion last year. One of the most important free zones with lots of potential is the Chabahar Free Zone.
Chabahar Free Zone is located near the Mokran coastal region. Based on the description of the Islamic Republic of Iran's leader, this region is a hidden treasure in Iran. He has mentioned this several times. As the third energy hub of the country, petrochemical units are going to be opened in Chabahar. These units will begin production after 2 years and their products will be ready to be introduced to the global market.
Free zones have helped the process of development of Iran through providing conditions that have attracted foreign investors.
Customs and transportation services are much better in the free zones. Also, there are better investment opportunities there. Aras Free Zone is one of the seven free zones in Iran. This zone has been very successful.